Adversity? Bring it. The struggle? I welcome it. Snooze on life? Never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 162. As always, I'm in the booth with the new three. We have Delaney, the big quadricep, Wallace, Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, the body, Regina. Delaney Wallace, aka the world's strongest accountant, is a financial planner whose practice is focused on using holistic financial planning to help his clients with their protection and investment needs. But not only is he an award-winning financial planner, but also a two-time IPF world champion as the Team USA 83-kilogram nominee, where he brought home the gold in South Africa in 2022 and then went back-to-back this year in Malta. He's also an international speaker, as well as a youth motivational speaker, tying the mindset of a world champion to financial literacy in a way that has never been done before. The big quadricep, welcome to the podcast, my brother.
Appreciate you, my man. I'm going to have to hire you to do all my intros. You make me sound important.
Yeah, I'm trying to get better with the tone and the delivery of things. But I just, so I read this once off air. So that was the second time. How'd I do?
Yeah. No, it was dope.
It was all right?
It was dope.
All right,
perfect.
Good. Guys, hope you guys found some value in the podcast. So we'll see you next time. So D, where are you from? And how did you get into weightlifting first?
Yeah. So I was born in Silver Spring, Maryland. When I was about sixth, seventh grade, we actually moved from Maryland up to New Jersey, that Morristown, Cherry Hill kind of area, right over the bridge from Philly. And then long story short, I came extremely close to getting a D1 scholarship for football. Some things kind of fell through the wayside cause I took the wrong Spanish class, therefore like certain credits and something didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And I found myself at this small D2 school that had never won a game before at that point in time for like the past like 5-6 years.
Okay.
Pace University.
Yep. Shout out Pace.
Yeah. Shout out to Pace. Love them there. From there I got into financial advisement once I graduated, and one day I just woke up. And I was in the office and I'm looking around and I'm like, I don't feel the same. Like being a college athlete, mm-hmm. like there's something about it, like you don't feel human, you know? And so I was like, let me start getting back in the gym. I'm putting on a little bit of weight. After college.
Really?
This is after college.
Oh, I'm assuming you're going to tell me I was 6 years old. I was born like this.
And No. I did not wake up like this.
Really?
I mean, my parents would disagree. I was like doing push-ups at like one, but like, and so like after college, right. In the cubicle, year out of like playing football, like I'm just like, I'm not going to be one of those guys that used to play football and then you wake up and then like you just look terrible.
Right.
Like it's just not going to be me.
Yep.
It's unacceptable. And so I had a friend that referred me to this gym called Transform Fitness in Tuckahoe.
Okay.
Shout out to Frank Daggs. He used to own it at the time. And so they referred me to this trainer. His name's called Kevin Lee. He used to do like Olympic lifting a little bit and all this other stuff. And I remember, so this is a funny story. He thought I was the biggest sham artist ever.
Really?
Like our first interaction, he thought I was an absolute just like liar through my teeth. So I walk in, I'm like, hey, my friend China, she referred me to you. Like, I want to have a trainer, just get back in shape. And so like every other trainer say, hey, like, what do you squat? What do you bench? What do you deadlift?
Yep.
Like, tell me about your lifts. Let me see like what we're working with from the start. And so I tell him, like, all right, well, you know, this is college, right? So I'm a year and a half removed at this point in time. But like when I was actually lifting, we did box squats. We didn't do regular squats, but I hit, I want to say at the time I hit like 630 or 640 for like five.
630 pounds?
Yeah, pounds.
That's for
like,
not normal.
For like, though. For like four or five, like four or five.
Yeah, yeah. But the, take me, hold on. Let's slow down. Slow down a little bit. All right. This I lift weights here. All right. But these are not normal numbers. So like when you were, what position did you play in college?
So I played running back.
So you were running back.
Slot receiver.
Slot receiver. Okay.
Yeah.
But you, I mean, if you can't see on YouTube, my man's quads are huge. So you did you always squat heavy though? Because those numbers are absurd. That's
so,
not normal.
So squat was always my thing.
Okay.
So even so in the first time I ever walked into the gym, yeah. I would say I was like maybe 12, 13. It was like freshman year of high school. Like I was young getting into high school. I think the first time I squatted and they had us maxed out, I maxed out around like 405
what?
On squat.
Wow.
And that wasn't because that was all I had. It was just like the coaches told me to stop. Like, you're going to hurt yourself. Like, just stop. Like, they just hadn't seen that before. Wow. So squat was always my thing.
Okay.
Bench usually lagged a little bit. And then with football, you never really deadlifted much. We did like hang cleans and stuff. So like, that was something that was new. But yeah, so like very similar reaction. Only like he didn't say it to me. Like he's in his head just like, okay. Shaking his head, but he's just like, he's just a lion. And so I was like, yeah, you know, squatted like maybe like 630, 640 for like 405. I benched like 430-ish, 420-ish for one. And then I told him, I was like, I didn't deadlift at all because we didn't do deadlifts for college. Mm-hmm. But the most I ever hang clean with straps was like 315.
Which is absurd. Right? Most people's wrists would snap off when they're trying that.
Yeah, so my wrists were definitely hurting when I played ball. Like I don't know how Olympic lifters do it. And so funny enough, like, so he didn't believe me at all. He thought I was one of those guys that just like walked in, was like, oh yeah, like I used to bench 225 and then like you get stapled by like the bar, right? And so he put me through like a test, if you were to try to like humble me without telling me he was putting me through a test. He's like, okay, just get on the bench and like just warm up until it gets heavy. Right? Let's just see what you actually got, right? So I warm up, you know, throw a plate on, throw a second plate on, third plate on, then maybe do like a quarter. And I see out the corner of my eye when I get back up, he like looks over to one of our mutual friends who's a massage therapist, Eric Berger, and he's like, yo, this guy's for real. he's real. And like, you know, going back to it, he like, you know, told me, he's like, yo, I actually thought you were 100% lying to me. You're just one of those guys that like inflated their numbers for like an ego. And I'm like, well, you're going to train me. If you're going to train me, you're going to figure out that if I'm stronger than I said, like me lying isn't going to do nothing for me. And so from that moment, he actually pushed me. And he was like, hey, like, I think you'd actually be pretty good at this thing called powerlifting. Yeah. And me, I'm like, nah, there's no way. Like, I played football for a majority of my life. We only lift really half of the year because the other half is playing ball. There's no way that I'm going to be able to compete at a high level with people that have been doing it since they're 12, 13, 14, 5. Like it just doesn't compute to me. Like, you don't walk onto a football field at 23, 24 for the first time and think you're going to the NFL. So, like, that's how I'm seeing it.
Yep, gotcha.
Convinced me to do a local meet. I was still a junior at the time. I was 23.
You bodied everybody.
And so it was funny because, and I didn't understand it, but I ended up breaking like three or four state records for New York. But I had a terrible day. I went like 4 for 9. So I only made 4 of the 9 attempts that I had.
Okay.
But because we were starting so high relative to, whatever, like it's still a good day overall. And so it was just a very interesting kind of scenario. Like literally my attempt selections and like just like, the growth that's happened. My attempt selections were literally, I want to go for the junior state record, the open state record, and the junior world record for all the lifts. Like that was the attempt. Those were the attempts. Like that was it.
We're going local, we'll go state level, and then we'll just go world.
And that was actually the attempts, right? That's why I went 4 for 9, right? Yeah. Like literally I think I took like a 30 pound jump on bench, like from like 420 to like 440, 450.
Yeah.
Like it was just absolute just anarchy everywhere. And after that meet, did a national meet, ended up doing well there for the juniors. And then he sent me a video of these two guys called Russell Orhi and Sean Noriega. And he's like, yo, these two guys are the best in the world in your weight class. I bet you can't catch them. And like my response was just like, watch me. And then ever since then, like I was just dialed in and super focused to try to catch up and get to that point. And we've gotten to the point that we're in that conversation. We're in the top of the world. And we've been able to do some cool things. And so really, like, I found powerlifting literally because I just wanted to get in shape. And some guy was just like, I bet you can't be the best at it. And so I'm hyper competitive. So when you put me in that mode, I just kind of lock in, and it just kind of grew from there. And that's like four or five years now. Yeah.
Yeah. I was not expecting that. I literally thought you were going to say, yeah, I was born this way, but to step out just for the first time at 23 years old. I mean, there's obviously some natural gift there for sure. But yeah, and that's like the same type of conversation with even athletes like LeBron, right? I think there's a natural gift there, but then also to become the best in the world.
Yeah.
You have to put the work in.
Yeah. It's
to become the best in the world. You know what I mean?
See again and again and again. Yeah.
You mentioned the word competition, right? So what does competition mean to you? Where did that stem from?
Yeah.
Right. And then what does your mental prep look like?
So competition for me is not just sports. It's just, It's all encompassing in my life. That's really what it means to me. Like every single aspect of my life, I try to compete in, and I don't know why. I'm just wired that way. I'm actually sick in the head. I think it's some type of like illness.
Can you give me some examples
like,
of that?
Like literally, like if it was somebody that I'm just like out to eat with, and like they're I drink water and they're drinking water too. Like in my mind, I'm going to turn it into like a water drinking contest. Like I still have not forgiven my mother from I was 6 years old. Yeah, I was 6 years old. My sister was two or three. And I remember we were walking back from the park and my sister wanted to race me to the front door. And my mom, my own mother, had the audacity, right? The treason, like treasonous behavior, like actual treason, right? Held me back so that my little sister could win the race. And then she thinks she could be, and I have not let go of it. As you could tell, like I just told you, I remember it. I don't forgive her. I'm still upset. Like that, like, yeah. So competition, like it's just, It's something that I think that every great person, whether sports or business or whatever, has like that competitive edge to them.
Yes.
And it pushes you to do more and to be more, right? Whether you're competing with yourself, whether you're competing against somebody else, whether you're competing to be the best, I think it pushes you and drives you to be more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's what competition is for me.
Yeah. How do you remain humble through competition, though?
Because you understand that. Like when you really understand competition, you understand that somebody's always coming for you. So even if you're at the top, there's somebody that's coming for you, right? And if you're at the bottom, you're like, I got to get there, right? Yeah. And so both sides of that spectrum, there's the underdog part of it where it's like, okay, I have to put in more work than you if you're better than me to catch you, because you're putting in work, so you're getting better. So I have to do enough to get where you're at, then to elevate above you in order to beat you. So that's that competitive edge. But then on the other side, if like I'm better than you, you're trying to take what's mine, right? Like you're literally trying to walk into my house and take the food off of my table, and that can't happen, right? And when you have that mentality, it just pushes you to do so much more, which then stems into the mental part of my prep. Every prep, I have this saying that I go by, and it says, every single day I recommit to my commitments, right? And what that means to me is, hey, like you win one world championship, the second that you win it, you're right back to prep for the next one, because nobody cares what happened last year. This year is the only year that matters when it comes to competing in 2023 versus 2022. And, you know, all those sayings like success is rented, never owned. You have to it's so true, right? And so in my mind is if I can wake up every single day and recommit to the goals, the dreams, the aspirations, the things that I have put as goals for myself every single day, if I do that, like compounding interest, right? The finance in me, like compounding interest, eventually I'm going to get a great result, right? And so if you think that, hey, I have one good session in the gym a week versus six good sessions in the gym a week, do you really think that you're going to beat the person that had six? No. Like, and so again and again and again, and so again, going back to that competitive aspect of it is, and we can talk about this even further. I think powerlifters as a whole, I think we're very, very, very lazy. I think we're one of the worst athletes that I've ever been around.
Powerlifters?
Powerlifters in general.
Well, listen, and this is me being just truthful here, right?
Yeah.
When I think of powerlifting, I think of big fat Russian Yugoslavian dudes, picking up like big balls, for lack of a better word.
We just lost a part of our following. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, so all our power lifters out here, you know, sorry guys. But yeah, and then you come and you kind of just even change the game for me in terms of my mentality of what powerlifting is. So I would agree, there's a level of like people think that it's a lazy sport because you kind of just see these humongous dudes. But when you kind of know what's going into their training, it's ironic now that you're saying that you actually believe it to be true.
I know it to be true. And because like I played football at a high level, I competed and I trained for the NFL combine next to like Chuck Clark. He used to play for the Ravens as the safety. Like I played soccer. I've played a multitude of different sports at different levels, right? And there's not a single sport, like if I ever went into the football locker room and told the guys that like I didn't work out, or I got no sleep, or I was eating pizza instead of eating the right, you know, nutritional whatever value that I was supposed to eat through it, I would get beat up in the locker room. Mm-hmm. But if you go on Instagram, you'll see a lot of, especially like the younger kids or so, even the kids that are coming up, or even people like, oh yeah, I had a bad session. Like, oh, or no, I didn't sleep well. I went out late last night. I did this, I did that. Almost like this badge of honor that they did all this bad stuff, but they still had a good day. You hear LeBron say that, he's going to get run through the mud, like through the media. And so those little things, those little aspects, is what powerlifters in general as a whole, I think we lack, right? And I'm one of them. I just talk objectively. And so for me, that's what I believed my competitive edge was. It wasn't that I played football and I was lifting before and all this other stuff. It's that I know how to put in work when nobody else is watching. And a lot of people want to put in work when they can post their 600 pound squat on Instagram. Right. And I'm like, I don't care if I squat 600 in the gym. I'm coming at after seven in comp, right? And so that's what competitive, you know, just competitiveness means to me, but also the mindset that goes in the world championship. It's every single day we start from zero. And I think that that's what's allowed me to elevate in a pretty short period of time, like 4 or 5 years, from absolutely no one in the sport to two-time world champion, is because I do believe that I put in more work than most.
Yeah, I'd say by looking at your quads, I agree. no, it was a great, great way to explain it, too. In terms of, I guess, your mental, stay there for me.
Yeah.
But don't just think about it from a powerlifting perspective. How do you show up with recommitting to your commitments on a daily basis when the hard days come?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now is a pretty prime example of it. I'm actually coming back from a really bad adductor injury. Like, I it hurts to get out of bed. Like, it actually hurt to get out of bed sometimes, right? And so I went from, you know, squatting, you know, 600-700, you know, deadlifting 750, whatever the case may be, to like, I 3 months ago or 2 months ago, I was squatting one plate.
I did two plates this morning, so I actually squat more than Delaney. Thank you very much.
Like with pain, you know? Yeah. And so again, and I guess this goes back to another story. I'm going to tell you a story.
Yeah, man. I love stories.
I know we talked about, we think that things happen for a reason. Right. And it's all timing and it's all this, it's all that. And so one story that most people wouldn't know just for looking at me, when I was around 8 years old, I was in a really, really bad accident. Right. I was in Maryland. My best friends, they were farmers. They towed their farm into this like haunted house Halloween party every single year. You know, pretty ironic that we're around Halloween now. Right. And so they had, but long story short, they had this tractor that they turned into a haunted hayride. Me and my buddy were jumping on it, playing tag. We're 8 years old, 7 years old. We're just running around having a good time. And one thing that I am also very into is like theater. So I was a theater nerd like growing up as well. And so at that point in time, I was really into Phantom of the Opera. And so we're playing tag, jumping off back and forth. And the last time I jumped off the tractor, if you ever saw The Incredibles, like that little seamstress that makes the like the suits for all of the... Hegna, there we go.
I'm not a movie guy, but he gets all the references.
There we go. That's why we need both of you.
Yeah, there you go.
I found out very quickly why she had that rule that no superheroes can wear capes. So I jumped off. My cape got hooked onto the back of the tractor. And smacked the back of my skull on the back of the tractor, got drugged for a few hours. You can actually still feel the bump on the back of my head.
Wow.
Skull fracture, brain, you know, trauma. Brain was literally swelling to the point that I couldn't fit in my own head, right? They had to put me in a drug-induced coma, rip my skull open. They're like, there's a 1% chance he wakes up because there's a lot going on here. And so I say all that to say, with the competitive aspect of things, like coming out of that, like a 1% chance to live, like literally 1%. Like you tell your mom, like you got a better chance of winning the lottery three times over before this boy comes back to life. There's that internal motivation that I like, there's nothing that can beat me. Right. You know, like when you beat 1% odds, it's just like you give me 15 and I'm up 15X. Like you gave me too much room. And so even in those moments on those bad days, there's almost that confidence or even push borderline arrogance of like, I'm the only one that can handle this. That's why God gave it to me, right? I'm the only one that can get the job done. I'm the only one that can persevere through these rough days, these bad days, and still come out on the other side a world champion, one of the best in the world. And so that's what kind of pushes me through. I go back to like moments in my life, and that's one, but there's multiple aspects as everybody. I go back to moments like that where it's just like, I've faced worse odds and come out on top. So why am I sweating this now? Right. And then the next thing is I think I just have a really good support base. Like my mom, my dad, my sister, they are absolutely, I'm absolutely blessed to have the family that I have. And so I remember going into the world championship this year, I was actually hurt. I just didn't tell anybody. My sister knew. And my sister bought a ticket to Malta. She wanted to see and I remember her telling me.
Where is Malta?
Malta's right on the coast of Italy.
Wow.
Okay. Like right on the coast of Italy. Yeah. Like 20-hour plane ride or so, give or take. And I remember when she said she bought her ticket, she's like, I'm so excited to go. I feel like I have so much energy now, right? And the significance to that is my sister's in microbiology in grad school right now, and she works like crazy shifts and hours and all this other stuff, and she's always tired. And I sat there and I'm like, well, if my little sister knows what's going on and she knows how stressed I am and I'm hurt and I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it, and she's flying out there and she's excited, and she, in her mind, she's hearing all of this. And she's like, but I know that my brother's going to come out on top. It's just like, it's almost an insult to her that I'm so stressed that I can't do it. Just put in the work and keep on going. And so little moments and things like that, I just use as fuel of saying, hey, okay, it's a bad day, but everybody's got a bad day, but I'm the one that can persevere through it and keep on stacking my chips to get the end result that I want. And so that, I mean, that's how I get through those bad days. I just remember that it's always been something worse that I've already overcome. So I'm the only one that can do it. That's why I have to, right?
Yeah, no, it's an elite mindset to have. There's obviously got to be benefits to now being in this financial game.
Yeah.
Right? What would you say is the biggest correlation that you've made between the fitness aspect and then the finance?
It's so funny. I think they marry each other very well now, even though they seem so different worlds. When I'm on top of like my fitness and my health and everything here, I'm a better financial planner. I'm more locked in, I'm more regimented, I'm on top of things a lot better because my structure has to be so much, it just bleeds over, right? If you're doing crappy things when you're outside of work, your work is probably going to be crap because you can't have two lives. You can't have two separate lives. They bleed into each other some way. But also, it's one of those things that getting into the financial services industry, it's baptism by fire. You own your own business. You get a license. They say, okay, good luck. Go get a license. Go find people that will give you money and trust you with it. And there's this like system or this way of thinking, way of doing things that every advisor needs to wear the same suit, the same shirt, the dun dun, 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 dun. We have the personalities of cardboard box. Like people don't really like talking to us outside of it, like all this other stuff. And what I found is that like the world championships, the fitness, some of the things that I do, it differentiates me enough to get your attention. And then my competency is what allows you to say, okay, actually, this is actually somebody that I want to hire. And so it's so funny that it's gotten to the point where I lean into these differentiating factors because I just need your attention long enough to show you that I'm actually the best to do this for you, right? And it's just so weird. I mean, the World's Strongest Accountant thing like that, there's a little tagline that I use and it kind of blew up. Like when the announcer announced me for like winning in Malta, he's like, and the Team USA World's Strongest Accountant, like this whole thing. And it's just turned into something that is very individualized to me, and they kind of just marry each other and benefit each other. I mean, I have some of my biggest clients have just come from them knowing that I'm a power lifter and they're into fitness, but they also know that I do finance, and they're just like, well, I relate to you on this personal level that I want to talk to you about something that's as personal as my finances.
Right.
And if you have the discipline enough, the drive enough, the consistency enough to become a world champion, then I have to assume that you have the discipline, the drive, and the consistency enough to manage my money in a good way. And so weird as it sounds, because you wouldn't think it originally. Like these are two separate worlds, nothing to do with each other.
I think it and I know it to be true. Uh-huh. But listeners, this is gold for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one thing when I talk about it, but again, I'm not in the financial service world.
Right? Yeah.
I'm heavily invested in multiple assets and opportunities, different revenue streams for years now. But also there's something to be said for having a world champion like yourself and also in the financial industry. And now you're saying what you're saying. I know it to be true, but I think this is just proof in the play right here. Yeah.
And so it's they've married very well. And I turned something that most of my industry would think is a distraction or just not whatever into something that's probably the biggest asset that I've had. And so they've married very well.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome. What should people know about, I guess, finance in general? Where did you, maybe not financial advice unless you want to provide that, but give me something in terms of, you know, somebody is 25 to 30 years old. They're starting to stack some money in the bank. What is your initial conversation with somebody like that?
Yeah. I say, so again, I'm all about being slightly different. We're going to talk about investments. We're going to talk about the insurance. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about all the basic stuff that everybody talks about. But one thing I think is really underspoken about, because most people don't get paid on it, and it's complex, and so most people just don't want to like deal with some of the complexity of it, is just understanding taxes, even on like a, in like a mild, just undertone way. I can save you 10% in taxes more than I can guarantee a 10% rate of return in the stock market, right? Like the likelihood of you being able to, like if you're making, you know, a little bit of money, to be able to save 10% or whatever of what you're making in taxes is far greater than you being, okay, with everything that's going on right now. Yeah, I can tell you the S&P going to go up 10% this year, right? And so by understanding taxes and positioning yourself in a way to be tax efficient, not just right now, but for the future, man, I'm telling you, like it blows everything else out the water, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's why I lead, like with all my clients, I push on that button more than anything. I'm like, you might find somebody that will get you a better rate of return in the stock market than me. That's cool. I don't care.
Yeah.
Net, when you look at it all, I'm going to put more money in your pocket because I'm focused on this one thing that you cannot run from. Like hell and high water, death and taxes, the only thing you know is going to happen. Let's lean on this a little bit more. And so I'd say understand your tax bill, understand how to, you know, create deductions, understand the location of where your money is invested, not just the allocation, but the location of how your money is invested and how taxes play a role in it. And you'll be surprised, like the cool things that come out of it and like just the growth that comes from it. So if I give one piece of advice that I think is a little bit different than what most people would give, is really understand what's going on with your tax situation even more and plan accordingly for it.
I will say this. I've spoke to many financial advisors. That's never been the first thing that I've heard, and I love it.
Yeah, because you don't get paid on it.
Yeah.
You don't get paid on it, right? They get paid to manage your money. They get paid to sell you insurance. Yep. They get paid to, and so, again, coming as a planner, right, you're paying for my expertise and my advice. And so there might be products or whatever that might fit into the mold, but my job is to produce the best outcome,
right,
regardless of the monetary gain that comes to my company, to me, or whatever. And so being able to come from that fiduciary lens, I can say, well, objectively, how are you a financial planner if you're not digging into that tax button? It's the one thing that you cannot run from. You cannot run from it.
Yep.
You have to address it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but most people don't. Yeah. Just because you go to Fidelity, they get paid to manage your assets. Yep. Okay, hell, how much do you have? Okay, you gave me $100,000. Okay, cool. Like, I'll invest it. See you in a year. We'll do a portfolio review. And then, you know, we'll hope that it's up at the end of the day. And so, yeah.
Tax-wise, the benefits and the importance of somebody establishing even like an LLC?
So an LLC in and of itself is not like a tax sheltering vehicle. Like you have an LLC, it doesn't do anything for you, right? But what it does allow you to do if you are earning some type of income that's outside of your W-2 job, it starts to release the restraints from your life from a tax standpoint. W-2 employees have very, very little tax deductions that they can create.
Yeah.
I'm always on the look for like just different strategies. And I've actually found a couple like recently that's happened that even works for W-2 employees. So I'm happy that I can start to bring that to my clients as well. Mm-hmm. But from a whole standpoint, it allows you to write off the studio equipment. It allows you to write off like, you know, gas. It allows you to write off your computer, certain expenses that if you work from home. So it just gives you more opportunity to start to drive down your taxable income with things that you already use.
Are doing, right. And I should have been a little bit more specific. And we're laughing here because CV and I were just talking about this. So we have a LLC for No Snooze, right? But I was talking to Claudio because he's also a videographer, photographer.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, listen, the importance of you establishing this LLC for yourself for all of this equipment that you own is essential to drive.
Oh, just bury every dollar.
Yep. But even before you go there, I think people in themselves, even when you have a hobby like that and you're not even making the income yet, right? But you own $5,000 worth of equipment in your hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a major benefit to opening up an LLC because eventually you may begin to produce income from it. Would that be accurate?
No, absolutely. Yeah, okay. So, and even from a standpoint of just, I have a separate LLC for everything that has to do with powerlifting. So now my meals are written off. Like my coaching is written off. Like all these. So now the hobby that everybody pays for a trainer that you can't write off, now it becomes a write off for me. And you could do it without an LLC. Like, to be fair, you can do some of that without an LLC. If you're receiving some type of income, it's cleaner. And so when I go to my accountant when I go to, when the IRS does an audit on me and I say, hey, no, all of these are business expenses because I use my business credit card and my personal credit card is this one. So every transaction that's on this business credit card is a business expense and it's clean, and it's clean and distinct. You pass through auditing a whole lot simpler and easier. And so it just makes your life a whole lot easier on that front. But yeah, I mean, I think like LLCs are for those that, you know, do have side income coming in, or just want to have side income or trying to build a business, mm-hmm. it can help. And even when you're not making money, it'll offset some of your W-2 income, you know, because, you know, most businesses don't make money at the beginning. A quick, just I guess, side tip or trick or something. Most people don't know that even your W-2 job, you can ask to be paid at 1099.
Yes. Can you do that from a, in any W-2 job?
So if they allow it, they can say no. They
because
can,
for they my can say job no. personally, right? I work local government.
So not happening, they're just going to say no, but they can if they want to. Mm-hmm. They'll just probably choose not to. But
especially, 1099 would be a more independent contractor.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. But so here, so the cool thing about it is when you do that though, let's say that, you know, you're married, W-2 job, not government. Your benefits are great. Her benefits aren't. By asking to be 1099, your company is saving somewhere between 7% and 22% on paying you as a 1099 contractor versus
per
W-2
individual.
Per individual. Right. Benefits, mm-hmm. health benefits, 401k matches, all this other stuff, payroll tax, things mm-hmm. of that nature. And so you could actually ask your employer to pay you 1099. Let's say that you keep your benefits. She's going to say, I want to be paid 1099, but give me a 10% raise on my money because I'm saving you 7% to 22%. Mm. Now you're bringing in more money, right? But now all of her income is coming as a 1099 contractor. Now you can just start burying all of that income in different type of expenses and things that you were already going to use because now you're a business owner, right? And so little things like that mm-hmm. that people don't really talk about because you don't get paid to talk about it, right? You get paid on implementation of things. It could just change the game and just allow you to be just more efficient, a little bit more efficient. And then that small efficiencies over time, compounding over time, grows in something bigger.
Yeah, it's funny. As I'm hearing you speak, you're literally, so in that one moment, you know you're not going to get paid to provide that advice.
Yeah.
But you're compounding the benefits of the relationship that over time you're building trust.
Exactly.
Right? Talk to me about when you're in business and doing the right thing by people and mm-hmm. how important that is for just business in general, right? And the importance of building trust and relationships.
Yeah. The reason why I went the financial planning route opposed to like advisory or just like, you know, things of that nature is because we're like in that my pitch at the end of it all, when I say that we work together, I literally say like, you're going to get a 1 to 2 page document that is a fiduciary kind of responsibility contract. Mm-hmm. It's for your protection, not mine. So if you find that I've intentionally screwed you over, you can quite literally sue me. Getting sued costs a lot of money and is bad for business. So I don't intend on getting sued.
Right.
Not many advisors or planners or whoever have a contract that literally puts their rear end on the line for screwing their clients over. Mm-hmm. And so that in of itself builds enough trust of saying like, I'm literally putting my livelihood, my name, my reputation, everything on the line. Cause if I do wrong by you, right, based on the information that I have, I could get sued. this is real life.
Yep.
And so even something like small as that builds a lot of trust because they know that they have that backing and that protection. Mm-hmm. But then also when I come back and I give certain recommendations that either they might not like to hear or they just might not, they might want to try to like push to the wayside because there's things we don't want to talk about, mm-hmm. right? I can literally say, you paid for my advice, right? You paid for me to give you what was in your best interest. So if you choose to ignore it, that's your fault, not mine.
Right.
I can lead you to water. You have to drink it though. And so like you paid for this. And what I found is like that also pushes people to action as mm-hmm. well. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause the majority of my job is how do I communicate to somebody in the language that they understand to provide the outcomes that they wanted at the end of the day. And so allowing them to see that, hey, like you've already paid for this advice. I'm giving you what you asked for. So if you choose to ignore it, it's all like that Wile E. Coyote like cartoon back in the day where like he gets pushed on the train tracks and instead of getting off of the train tracks, he just like pulls down the blinds and still gets hit. Okay, it's a cartoon. And so there's no actual repercussions of it all. But a lot of people do that in their life, in their finances, in their marriages, in their relationships. They know there's a problem And instead of just getting out of the way, instead of just doing what it is to move forward, let's just ignore it. If I ignore it long enough, it might just go away. And it's always gonna compound the opposite way. Yeah, it always comes back, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool.
We wanted to take a quick second to let you guys know that we partnered with our good friends over at Orgain.com. We're happy to offer our listeners 30% off by entering the code NOSNOOZE30. Again, that's NOSNOOZE30 for 30% off your first order. If you're on the market for a new protein powder, nutritional shake, protein bar, or collagen peptides, Orgain is your one-stop shop. As all of you know, my Crohn's disease is currently in remission, and the only protein I use is from Orgain. My personal favorites are the chocolate peanut butter and the vanilla bean. With the code, you can try a 2-pound tub for under $20. Talk about not snoozing. Go get yours today. Now, back to the epi.
You're a strong dude, man.
Try to be.
Right? So talk to me a little bit. You must have some level of insecurities that you deal with.
Uh-huh.
Right? So for me, I'll give you an example. For whatever reason, sometimes I don't feel worthy of good relationships because I've ruined a lot in mm-hmm. my past.
Mm-hmm.
Something with like the podcast here, content creation.
Mm-hmm.
At times I get very insecure, like, am I supposed to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Am I really providing value to mm-hmm. people? So one, I guess, would be the insecurities. And then two would be the hack that you kind of have for it. And just to follow up on my content insecurity, I've actually now convinced myself, and this is my hack,
mm-hmm.
people are going to consume content regardless.
Yeah.
Whether I put out content or not, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm not putting out content, I'm basically saying to somebody else, go listen to somebody else's podcast,
mm-hmm.
go buy somebody else's book,
mm-hmm.
and go get value from somebody else.
Yeah.
So what I say is I hack that, F that, I'm that guy, and now I put the content out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I do
Absolutely.
That over and over and
Absolutely.
Over again. So is there something that you deal with that you're willing to share that people wouldn't necessarily know about you?
Yeah. I mean, just like kind of the general statement, I struggle with just thinking.
Because you're a world champion now, right? This is different. Like, I'm not a world champion. You're a world champion dude, and that's a fact, right? So I'm curious to know, what is it that you struggle with on a maybe daily, monthly basis?
Sometimes you just feel like you're still not enough. Like, you know what I'm saying? And whether that be like on the athletic side, mm-hmm. whether that be in the finance side, like as you said, like, oh, yeah, how old are you? Like, I'm younger than what you mm-hmm. expected. And so there's always, and I'm hyper aware of what I know, and I'm hyper aware that I don't know everything, which I do think is a benefit. Like, I admit and I know that I don't know things, so I surround myself with the people that do, so to make every. But like, I know that there's flaws. I know that I'm not perfect, and so I constantly beat myself up for perfection, because I look at every single person around me, and I find something that they're doing better than me at, and I'm like, I need to be better. And so I constantly struggle with, I guess, like that imposter syndrome mm-hmm. sometimes. I constantly, especially recently now, I guess with world championships, you get world championship attention sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have kids that are like, oh, yeah, I want to be just like you when I grow up, or this and other thing. Or, oh, like, I had somebody that messaged me and says, hey, just like your positive outlook on everything and how you attack life, it's like it stopped me from committing suicide. Right. Like, things like heavy yep. stuff happens yeah, sometimes deep. Too. And then on the finance side, it's like I am in charge. Right. I am in charge of people's livelihoods. Right. Like, I am the person that guides children to be able to go to college, that allows people to say to finally retire from that job,
mm-hmm.
that like make sure that family members in estate planning transition receive what they were supposed to receive and are able to pass through this emotional time, at least emotionally, at least financially unscathed, right? So there's a lot of burden. There's a lot of importance to that, right? And I think what gets me through those times, and even content creation, I hate social media. I hate it. I have sponsorship.
But you have to do it.
And I have to do it, right?
Yeah.
But I hate it because it's, for me, it's not necessarily for the attention of it all. It's mm-hmm. not to like, oh, like this is me. Like 90% of the people that would just meet me would never know 90% of the things that I do. Right. We'll get through this podcast. You won't know 90% of the things that I do. Right. And but at the end of the day, it's very similar from a content standpoint. It's like somebody's gonna consume content regardless. And I believe that I have a majority of people's best interests at heart. And so in a world where there's a lot of misinformation, in a world where there's a lot of people that are trying to take advantage of people, that when there's a lot of just chaos going on, why, like, is my obligation, right, to provide somebody with an outlet or a source of pure content, pure information, pure-hearted content, like anything. And then on the flip side, when it comes to the imposter syndrome, whether it be financial planning, whether it be through world championships, like, do I deserve this praise or these accolades or whatever? And people think so much or highly of me. I again put it to a like that servitude type of moment where it's just like, it is my obligation to prove them right. You know, like all those good things that they say about me, it's my duty to prove them right.
Right.
And so in my day-to-day actions, I have to prove that. And so again, every day I recommit to my commitments. If you think I work hard every day, it's now my job to prove you right because you look up to me in some way, shape, or form. And so I want to give you a real source of motivation, mm-hmm. not a fake one. And so that's my hack. A lot of it is very, very much so like kind of like, I have this like very, very, for most people, weird sense of servitude to a lot of people that are around me. I feel like a lot of people have enriched my life, and so it's my job to enrich others as well. And so in those moments, it just goes back to, it's not even about me anymore. It's literally about proving everyone that believes in me correct and having that servitude. Even right now, like I could leave right now. I'm hurt. Like I am physically hurt. And I've thought about like, just, okay, I'm stopped powerlifting. I got 2 world championships. I can speak now. I can write a book. I can do whatever it is I want now. I've got enough. I've done enough. But coming back from an injury, knowing that people, you know, suffer injuries, suffer hardships in their lives all the time, and being that example on a high level, on a big stage where there's millions of people watching and there's no running from your mistakes, right? I want to prove that you can fight through that adversity and keep on going. And you're going to see the process of that. You're not just going to see me say, oh yeah, you know, something happened, I just did it. Like, you're going to see that whole struggle. You're going to see me fail. And so now it's just the art of competition, right? Yeah. It's the art of growth. And it all goes back to servitude for me. I just have this like weird sense of obligation to a majority of people around me that I put in my circle. And so it's just, I want to prove them all right, you know?
I love that. And I have a tagline in my profile. It says, always learning, always serving.
Uh-huh.
Right? So it goes right to that piece. Going back to the accident, though, when you're 8 years old.
Yeah.
Do you believe in a higher power?
Yes.
Yeah?
So my dad is a pastor.
Really?
So I don't go to church as much as I do now, just busy and all this other stuff. But I do, you know, I obviously believe in it, and that drives me through a lot of things, like more things than I talk about. Like, I just go back to that moment. I'm just like, I'm here for something. like the doctor said, like, you have a 1% chance to wake up, mm-hmm. not even wake up and be functional. Like, functional is a whole nother thing, right? Like, they told my parents to go find a home to put me in. They told my parents to go buy a casket. And I woke up and I was able to walk again. I was able to go to school, like college scholarship, 3-4 GPA in college, played football, did all these things, became one of the strongest men in the world from not being able to walk at 8, right? Right. And so I just believe, so also that's also part of what drives me too. It's just, I have to believe that I'm meant to do more and be more. And then when I do have certain fears, and going back, I'm bouncing back and forth now. When I do have certain fears, because this reminds me of something, one thing I always tell, especially my mom, when she's like, oh, yo, be careful, slow down or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, don't go so hard. Because my mom's not the entrepreneur. My dad's not necessarily the entrepreneur. They're more like safe. They didn't even want me to go into finance because you don't get paid a salary. Like, you get paid what your clients provide you. I always look at it, I'm just like, I was supposed to be gone at 8. I'm 28, 29 now. So even if everything goes to hell and I die, whatever, like worst case scenario, everything just implodes right now. I'm up 20 years. Like, you know, when it all comes down to it, I'm up 20, you know? And so why have that fear? Why pull back? Why settle for ordinary when you can be extraordinary? And every single day I meet somebody that shows me that I'm not thinking big enough yet, right? I always think I'm thinking bigger than I think bigger. And then something else happens that you're not thinking big enough. And so that it drives me through so many different things. It pushes me to do so much more. It's the way that it's why I move the way that I move. And so like, I just take inspiration from so many little things. It's weird.
I asked that question because something was telling me that God is in your life. And I didn't talk to you before.
Yeah.
Right? Did we mention anything about God, Jesus, none of that?
Nah.
Because I'm on my own journey.
Yeah. Right?
But as you've been talking to me, I've been just feeling like a presence of some sort.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then for you to say that your dad's a pastor, it was like, I got the chills when you said it. Because I didn't know that, you know?
Yeah.
No, thank you for that. Talk to me a little bit about nutrition, right? Random, I know we're shifting here, but we're all over the place. What does a world power lifter, world champion power lifter eat? Because again, I associate this with, like, you know, some of these guys eating like
big fat guys, eat pieces, just get as fat as heavy as humanly possible. You lift more weight. So my nutrition, like, you'll actually be pretty surprised. When I'm deep in prep and I'm really like dialed in and we're going, I'll probably sit maybe somewhere around like 2,200 calories, like not much. Also, it's because I have to keep my weight down. Like, I compete at 182.6 pounds, 83 kilos.
I wanted to break that down for the listener. We were talking off air before.
Yeah.
And so for some reason in powerlifting, they go by kilos.
Because it's an international sport.
Ah.
In America, we use pounds.
Pounds, right.
Everybody else is, they're kilos.
So the conversion is
2.2
pounds.
And some change, yeah, for every
2.2
kilo.
Pounds is 1 kilo.
Kilo.
Yeah, so when I read your bio, it said 83 kilos, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how much you weigh.
Yeah.
How much?
About 182.6 pounds.
Gotcha. Good. Okay.
And so if I get too big, I can't compete. Like, I missed weight, right?
Yeah, is there fluctuation? Like, do you have a swing, like a 5 pounds that you guys can compete in that weight class or no?
No, it's like 182.6 or under.
Really?
So I can be 182 if I'm 183.
Or 95 pounds.
You're out.
Right. But you could be 95 pounds and compete at that class?
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
You can go up, you just can't go down. You have to be underneath, right? Nutrition, yeah. I mean, when I'm super dialed in, like, I'll have half a carton of egg whites, like one of those bigger cartons. So like,
drink 50,
no, I'm not that. I'm not that crazy yet.
Okay.
I know some people that do that. Yeah. That's sick behavior.
I know a guy that does that.
Sick. I'll usually either have that with, I like toast. That's almost like my, like, toast, like croissants. I love bread. So that's almost like my, like, dessert at times when if I have a little bit extra, but I'll either have that with fruit or maybe some toast. Now I've gotten to the point, just because I'm so busy with planning, that I pick up all of my food from this spot in the Bronx called Healthy Kitchen. And so they give me a tray of chicken, they give me a tray of rice, they give me a tray of veggies. Sometimes the chicken will go for elk or beef or whatever. It'll switch swap every once in a while. And I'll weigh out enough for all of my meals for the week through that, so I don't have to cook, just being more efficient, right? So I'll have two of those meals throughout the day, maybe have like some type of fruit juice prior to my lift to get some quick carbs in, and then some type of lean protein at the end of the day, whether it's a protein shake or then egg whites again at the end of the day. And it's pretty the same every single time. I could switch it up, but with my schedule, right, if I was just powerlifted and that's it, maybe I had time. But I mean, I work.
I work shout out Healthy Kitchen
midnight
though.
Sometimes. Yeah, shout out Healthy Kitchen. I really would not be able to do 90% of the things that I do without them. And when I am in these like flux times where like I'm not picking up food or whatever, I see a vast difference in myself and my work and everything without them. So it's not just a meal prep thing for me. It's also just a consistency, a routine thing for me. And I owe them a lot.
Yeah, I just met him at an event too. Great dude.
Crazy dude.
Awesome, awesome guy.
Funny guy.
Yes, very funny.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna do some work together too. So
that's awesome.
Definitely shout out to them. I wanted to touch on something I'm forgetting here. Oh, the motivational speaking piece, right?
Yeah.
Motivational speaking is, it's very, you could say foo-foo these days, right? Everybody does it.
Yeah.
But not everybody works with youth. Right. Why'd you choose that youth thing? I know you do a lot of professional stuff for adults. I'm just actually personally more intrigued with that youth bracket.
Yeah.
What got you into that and how'd you start your youth work?
So shout out to Warmheart, Warmheart Life and Brandon Godoris, because I've actually met him at a networking event at Equinox in Connecticut. And he, you know, he had this speaking kind of like course in this class and all that. And it was funny because at first, and this is the first time I'm telling the story, so when he finally sees this, it's going to be funny. When I first met him, I didn't think he was a public speaker. He's very mild mannered, very quiet. And then like, I'm just, I have a lot of energy. I'm bouncing around everywhere. Yep. Like I ADHD. So I listen to Eric Thomas. I think, okay, that's a motivational speaker, not like the calm. There's something just told me, take his course. I took his course. He taught me like the structure of how to actually build out a good speech. That turned into another course that I took in Chicago, and then also turned into an opportunity with me and a few other people getting to speak at Esperanza Preparatory Academy a few weeks ago. And in that moment, when I finished my talk and everything else was going on, I spoke with the principal, and she happened to hear what I do for a living. I came as at the world champion, because no kids cares about finance, right?
Right.
World champion, I can get your attention a little bit more and then give you a message. But she heard about what I did for a living, and then she said, hey, like, New York is requiring us to have a financial literacy core program. So, I mean, we can either teach it, or somebody actually does it for a living can teach it, right? And so it turned into this opportunity where she's going to help me get sponsored for my vendor's license, which essentially allows you to speak in schools in New York City, and you need it to speak in schools in New York City and get paid for it. And from there, it's just like, it's one of those things. It's like, I'm a big believer that like life will push you in the directions where you need to go. And I didn't necessarily see room for me to be able to speak to kids and children and for it to all make sense. And then that opportunity arose. And so I'm working on the deal. It hasn't closed yet, but working on a deal to speak at the school and do like a 6-week program for them and then for their faculty and staff. And then also turned to an opportunity in the Bronx as well, where somebody reached out and said, hey, like, we're looking for somebody similar, send us an invoice. And so I think that again, going back to like calling and like, hey, like obligation, mm-hmm. is like, it's also one of those things where if you see me, the first thing that you think about is not going to be financial planner, right? Yeah, I don't fit that like stereotypical mold. Mm-hmm. And so to break that and to give somebody another perspective or another lens or a different thing to view in this realm, I think is vastly important, because we the mind believes, the body achieves what the mind believes, right? And so if you can't see it, it's hard for you to actually believe it and make it so. And so to show the kids that, yeah, I'll come in as this powerlifting world champion, I'm lifting 700 pounds, I'm benching for something, I'm doing all these other cool things, da da da. Oh, but yeah, no, like, school matters, mm-hmm. right? So if you think I'm cool, if you think this is all dope, like, understand, like, this is also what comes with it too. This is what I do for real. And so it's this real, this cool blend between the two, where they can actually see that, you know, because growing up, like, it was cool to be hood. I don't know about, like, it was cool to be hood. And I'm not hood by any means. Like, I grew up in Morristown, New Jersey. But, like, I wanted to be, because that was the cool thing. And I didn't see many other people like me that were doing other things. And so to give a different outlet as well just allows them to see the duality of man, right? You can be a star athlete and also be a thespian or in theater. You can be great in music and also play basketball. You can be in finance, but also be a world champion powerlifter. You can be great at multiple things and don't pigeonhole yourself into that one piece. And so it's a mix of motivation of showing the kids that you can be more. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not thinking big enough. Like, you're not. But also, again, giving them that ground level kind of financial advice that most people would, I speak to 55-year-old adults that don't understand what a Roth IRA is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so giving them some foundations that they can take with them to the throughout the world and make good decisions, even small ones that will compound over time, that could, you know, change their life and put them in the right direction. And so it kind of came to me. It wasn't mm-hmm. something that I originally was like, oh, I'm going to do this and whatever. It kind of came to me, and there was the opportunity came, and I see a opportunity to build a business around it, while also making what I believe would be a huge impact. And yeah. So
we have a group of kids that Delaney can talk to, right, CB? Yes, sir. Absolutely. We'll talk about that off air.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you, I love the way that you embrace your upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love how you're like, I'm not hood. I'm from Morristown, which, by the way, does it smell over there too, like Newark?
No. North Jersey is dirty.
Oh,
okay. I'm in the South. All right,
we have a lot of Jersey.
Yeah, that whole dirty Jersey thing, like that's
it
North.
It stinks sometimes.
That's North.
I don't know why.
It's industrial. It's got all the smoke and the smoke.
I don't want none of that industrial.
Come down my way. You can be like, oh, this is nice. It's like Eastchester Harrison. You know. Yeah.
My point is, though, I love how you embrace that, right? And you're like, well, that was a huge foundational building block for the success that you've had. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are given opportunities in life and they just don't seize those moments.
Mm-hmm.
How do you relate to the inner city kid who didn't have two parents at home? and they had different struggles than you, but now your message, you're speaking to all these kids and even adults,
yeah.
you know, but there's something to be said about like you embracing that mm-hmm. and then finding ways to relate. So I'm curious how you do it because it's got to be challenging.
Yeah, it's actually not very challenging. And I think, again, another thing we talk about hours about yep, things. Yep. I played track. I did football. I did soccer. I did lacrosse. I was also in theater. I did mm-hmm. musicals. I sang in the a cappella choir. I was in Boy Scouts. And so with all those different things, I'm missing stuff, right? All those different things, it allowed me to be able to speak to people at the level that they can communicate and understand, right? I talked to a football player way different than I talked to the high school cheerleader, to the high school, you know, theater nerd, the person that played the flute and the mm-hmm. saxophone. But I know how to communicate to all of them, but still be myself.
Right.
Right. And so, like, in playing football, you have all walks of life. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I'm saying? I know killers. Right. Like, mm-hmm. like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not hood, but I know people that can get to you if I need, like, yeah. you know, like, and so we have that mutual respect and that mutual bond because we had that love of football. And so, which also brings me to the point is like, which is also why, like, I don't necessarily feel the need that I have to like overextend myself and sound like I'm like super badass and tough. And I don't have to have this like Napoleon complex with people because I'm very secure with who I am. It's like, this is what I can do. This is who I am. I know my lane. I stand on this and I don't have to posture. And so when you don't have to posture and pose for so long, people understand that and they relate to it and they respect it. And so I've gotten to the point where like, if Camden, New Jersey was right over the bridge from Morristown, like best place to live in America, worst place to live in America back in like 2008 or something oh, wow. like that. Like I was on like a 2020 special with like Diane Sawyer about it. Cause I was like the only black kid in Morristown. And I was like, you're literally 5 minutes from Camden. This is the best place, this is the worst place. This whole thing. But it's like, I can communicate with you. Cause it's like, I do understand. I do know what it's like. I mean, like my dad's church was in Philly. In a bad part of Philly. So like I was around it. So I understand it enough. But when I don't pose and posture to be somebody, I was like, you can tell when somebody's faking, trying to create like synergies that like don't actually exist. And they're like messing it up. It's like, oh yeah, like you're a bodybuilder. It's like, no, I do powerlifting. It's like, now I know you're not understanding me. You don't actually. And so through that, I think I've been blessed to be able to speak to so many different people in so many different ways. Cause I've walked so many different just forms of life. Mm-hmm. That I can walk into a school and I can be into, you know, even in like the school that I went to, like there was this one kid that was bad as all hell. He wasn't listening to nothing, but I got up to speak and all of a sudden he got a little bit more quiet. There was that mutual respect because he's like, hey, world champion, athlete, football, all these things you resonate with. But let me tell you something. I'm not just some random schmuck that can catch a football. And then once that's done, I'm on the street. There's a whole lot else going on. And let me explain to you why that's so important,
yeah.
right? And so that's why even like just, I was very intentional with like, I didn't come in a suit and tie. I came in my USA track suit because it leveled me down to their playing field so they can see, okay, oh, this is kind of cool. Well, by thought, if this is cool, everything else that comes with being this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just the athlete. I did good in school. I did this. I did extracurriculars. I did all these other things. And now I just changed your paradigm of thinking right. of what actually is cool. And I'm telling you, it's like, hey, like I used to suffer from like insecurities on that standpoint. Mm-hmm. My boys used to make fun of me when I came late to football practice because I was out there in chorus singing in the choir. But I was the strongest person on the football team. So you're going to respect me though, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm. it's still. And so by having like just that, again, like the duality of man, like being able to just bounce back and forth between different sectors, I can talk to the person on the corner of Camden, New Jersey, Camden, New Jersey, and I can talk to the prime minister of whatever, and I can navigate those conversations very authentically in a way that is very true to me, and you can tell that I'm being real, and I'm not just making something up because I saw a cool quote on Google.
Right.
And so it's actually pretty easy for me.
Well, now it is. Now it's definitely easy, and yeah. I mean, you're delivering it perfect, but I asked you that question strategically because I think that's the gold in you.
Yeah,
That's definitely your gift that you're just embracing now 100%. Because mm-hmm. that's not easy. I see, and I know CV can relate to this too, just from people that we deal with. I got best friends of mine that are like, yeah, well, I didn't really go through adverse moments in my life. Or, you know, I'm not deserving of XYZ because I had, you know, two parents in the home and I was taught really good things, so I am who I am. I'm like, you're missing the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody like yourself has the ability to embrace that and now relate to everybody. I think that's a very unique thing about you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I'm curious about this is for me, right? Not for the listeners, but I'm curious about your routine.
Yeah.
Just in general, like when you wake up, what's a typical day look like for Delaney?
Yeah, I mean, a typical, and just the nature of my job, no day is the same a lot of times, but there are some like there's nuances to it, or like I'll wake up, I'm a later riser, might be 7:30 that I get up.
Or no?
Yeah.
You hit the snooze button?
Yeah, for sure.
You do?
For sure.
Really?
And
Wow.
And I'll explain why. Like, so I'm a later riser. It might be like 7:30. Latest is 8, depending on when I get to bed. But again, it's that whole recommitting to your commitments. If I committed to being a world champion powerlifter, I need 7 to 8 hours of sleep, right? Which goes against the financial planning piece, which like some of them are in the office at 6 and working. And so so part of it is being okay with letting everything have its season and not feeling regretful or beating yourself up for allowing everything to have its season. Mm-hmm. And so I've been more intentional as of recently of making sure that I am prioritizing sleep, even though, you know, some in my industry would be like, all right, well, yeah, I get up at 6 and I'm doing the ice bath and I'm in the office at 6:30 and okay, but once I hit the ground running, I hit the ground running, mm-hmm. right? So first meeting will be 8:30, maybe 9, whatever the case may be. I've started to push my first actual like meetings back, so then I could do maybe some paperwork. So if I do have to hit the snooze button to catch up on sleep, mm-hmm. I can, and it's a little bit more malleable. I'll get out the office. I'll try to get out the office by 6:30. So that I can train. I train at night because I can't do the 6 a.m.
Really?
I'm trying to squat 672 at 6 a.m.
No,
and like I'm telling you, like I tried it once and I thought I was actually gonna like break. I almost spontaneously combusted into flames. It was bad. And so from there, like work will be like either work meetings or like meeting with staff or paperwork or marketing or whatever. It always changes, right? Mm-hmm. So that work window. And then from there, I'll go back home. I coach about 40 athletes worldwide in powerlifting, like online. So I'll get back to my athletes and do that at night before I go to bed. And then also it's just visionary stuff right before I go to bed. Like, right, how do I market? What are people I can connect with? Who are people I can help grow my business? Who are people that I can refer business to and help them grow? Because I think what you give eventually comes back to you. And there's just so many aspects of my life where it's just like being a good person. What got me through doors that I had no clue even existed, right? And so I'm very just, I believe in just doing good in general. And then every once in a while, I'll have like a networking event, you know, Tony Cigar event that happened a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Like that was at like 7 o'clock at night. So I adjusted my schedule, got to the gym at like 5, 4-ish, got out by 6, shower change, networking event, because all part of business. Mm-hmm. And so I might get to bed somewhere around like 11, 12 o'clock at night, sometimes 1 in the morning, which is why there are some days that unfortunately I have to admit, and I'm not going to lie to you, I do hit that snooze button, because that's all at the end of the day. Hey, recovery is also key. And hey, if I want this world championship to be a part of my life, that means sacrifice on other areas. So I've started to prioritize that a little bit more. Yeah, I used to be the guy I ran on like 4 hours of sleep. And
yeah, no, it's tough.
It doesn't work, yeah.
Have kids. Good luck to you, man.
Yeah, so I'm running the no kid wave as long as I can. That's also why I go so hard right now. Yeah. Like people ask why I go so hard, right? And so like my vision, right? I was super, back to my upbringing, I was super, super, super blessed. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. So every single day that I got home from school, she was at the front door waiting for me, right? I spent so much time with my mom. My dad worked. He made enough of the time that you take care of the family, me and sister, whatever the case may be. And I truly believe that I got so much value from my mother being home and not being a nanny or being by myself or all this other stuff, that I want that for myself, right? Like when I do get to that point, I do get married, I do have a wife, whatever the case may be. The goal is that she does not work. And it's not this macho man, like women belong in the kitchen thing. It's like, I truly believe that building a family and building and educating like your offspring, your youth, mm-hmm. is such a important just job, right, in and of itself, and so impactful that if the cost of admission is I just have to go hard enough to be able to handle the family finances myself, I'd rather that, because I believe that I have a leg up on so many people because my mom was home. Mm. Like off the strength of my mom being home every single day. But that's also what drives me. Like I want that for my family because that's what I received. And I, looking back at it, didn't always appreciate it, but looking back at it, I see how important it was. I just see the difference in dynamics. And I think that's also to my mindset. My mom was super loving, nurturing. I could do no wrong. I was the golden child. My dad was like, you can always be better. And so that yin and yang, that push and pull of both of them, allow me to be like, yeah, okay, like I'm him. I'm doing good things, but I can be better. Mm-hmm. And there's the humility side of things. And it's just that tug that always helps you push forward. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. My next question was going to be, what does family mean to you? But clearly you answered that one.
Yeah.
It's
everything.
That's a beautiful way to put it, because I love how specific you are about, like, that's your, people might hear it and say, oh, you know, the man versus the woman. And you're like, no. My mom was home, and this is the value that I received from my mom. So you know that to be true.
Absolutely.
Beautiful way to put it.
Absolutely.
What else you want to share with everybody, man?
There's so many different, it's one of those things, there's so many different ways that,
it's open to you.
I'm trying to think, like, just,
don't think too hard, man.
There's just so many things that we could talk about that I don't even know.
Where do you want to be in, the 3 to 5 year thing?
3 to 5 years.
I'm going to go reverse of that.
Okay.
Where do you want your legacy to be? Right. Like I think I can talk to your 3 to 5 years personally. Yeah. Like from hearing this episode, I think listeners can see where you are and where you want to be and the success that's there. What does the legacy look like for you?
My legacy, I want people to look back at me and just be like, yo, this kid was really dynamic, right? In the sense of, I want to break that paradigm of thinking that you have to be one dimensional. Right. I want to break that paradigm of thinking that you can't think bigger. Mm-hmm. I want to break that paradigm of thinking that you like everything is in this small little box and you can't expand outside of it more. I think everybody limits themselves way too much. I think that I think that anybody could be a world champion power lifter if they put enough time into it. I think anybody could be a great financial planner if they put enough time in it. Husband, wife, whatever. Like, you can be great in so many different things. And I think that people say, oh, hey, wait till you have kids. And then all of a sudden everything changes. Things change, but you can still be great, right? Absolutely. My boy Taylor Atwood, he's a, you know, 2-time, 3-time world champion. He's got a son as well. But the kid that comes with sacrifice. And so I want people to look back and say, like, when they think that they can't do anymore, when they think that their schedule is too tight, when they think that they're limited by their circumstances, their family dynamics, their natural gifts, whatever the case may be, I want them to like look back at me and be like, nah, like I got more. I want them to think that outside of the athletic side of things, I want them to think that in the public speaking side, I want them to think in the finance side, the business side. Like, and I haven't talked about some, there's so many things that I'm working on on the ground level that's starting to bloom.
Yeah.
That once it's all said and done, I want you to be like, holy God, like this guy does everything. Like, he can do it all. But not to pound my chest and say, oh yeah, I'm like that. Mm-hmm. But so now when I look you in the face and tell you that you're just not doing enough, like that you're just not doing enough, right? You can't look at me and say, oh no, you're just talking because you got this or because you got that. It's like, no, I did it. And go to your point, why it's so easy for me to talk to a majority of different people, because 90% of the things that come out of my mouth, I'm coming from experience. I'm coming from, I'm doing it. I've already done it. Mm-hmm. So when I tell you, in the gym, and I tell my boys, like, you're not going hard enough. Like, you say you want to be stronger, you say you want to be a world champion, but I know you don't, because you're bullshitting in between sets, your nutrition sucks, you're chasing after girls in the gym, you're not focused, you're doing this, you're trying to overshoot to make some cool Instagram, you're doing all these different things. They can't look back at me and say, oh, well, you're done. They look at me like, damn, I can't really say nothing, because I know he puts in the work. I've seen him do it.
You know? It's about that life.
And so... Yep. I think that's what I want my legacy to really be. Yeah. I want you to look at every aspect of my life and just be like, hey, like this, the spider web that this guy, the tentacles that this guy has been able to just blow out in all these different directions, everything is possible and you can really do it. I think that's really what it is. Just being Swiss Army knife.
Yeah. So take me back to now.
Yeah.
Where do you want to get better?
I think the biggest thing that I want to get better at is my, I'm not an organized person by nature. I just do and I figure it out later. And it's helped me get to where I am. It will hold me back to getting to that next level, because you're not sustainable if you don't have a process. And so I next year for me is really big on building out processes, building out systems, being more sustainable, my day-to-day life, as well as just like work in general. And then with that, I think that this time restraint that I have, because I give up a lot of like personal time for everything that I do, it will start to subside because I know that I'm not efficient. And so I think efficiency is going to be my next thing. I just go, like I can just go. Mm-hmm. But eventually, like, just going isn't enough, right? You have to be a business owner, right? Yeah. And a business owner doesn't, like, business owners do just go, but not the ones that scale, not the ones that scale the big ones. And so
that was the word that I was going to use when you said that. The word that came to mind is scalability.
Exactly.
And it's anything in life that's scalable. It's the, I think everybody can have structure.
Yeah.
Right. But people who are structured and organized are elite individuals.
Exactly. And elite. And that's where I'm trying to get to. I 100% lack in it. I know it. I got called out by my mentor who I'm going to see after this the other day about it. He's like, you have no control over your schedule. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what you're doing. And man, like everybody's like, oh yeah, Delaney, you're doing great. Like again, but that's what keeps you humble. You have those people that can, you don't know what's going on. You just go by the seat of your pants. And like, and so that would be the thing that I'm really focused on in 2024.
Last question, I guess, as we wrap this up, what would you tell the everyday person who makes a lot of excuses for themselves? And it could be in any industry, whether it's, you know, losing 10 pounds to get healthier, whether it's starting that little project they wanted to start, whether it's going for the raise that they want to get, whether they have 3 children and they can't find time to do things. What do you now know to be factual in your life that you would like to share with somebody who creates all types of excuses? And not saying that you don't make excuses, or I don't, because I do all the time as well.
Likewise.
But I limit those excuses, right?
Yeah.
And I do.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear from you, even for myself. People who make excuses, what's the advice?
Yeah, I mean, for those of you that want to do more, that want to be more, that are making excuses for yourself, they're saying, I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, I don't have the expertise, the whatever. I would say there's always time to start. Like the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago. The second best time is right now. And so if you focus on the day-to-day actions again and again and again and again and again and again, every single day, you keep on doing it. Find 3 things. Like take your goal. Take that biggest goal that you have and take 3 things. And before you go to bed, before you're allowed to lay your head on that pillow, you make sure that those 3 things are done. I promise you, I actually know this to be true from so many aspects of my life. I promise you, that when you wake up 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, you will 100% be in a 10 times better spot than you are. There's always enough time. There's always a way around it. And take the challenge of saying, hey, if I don't have enough time, find a way to create it. Like turn that into a competition, right? And I think that just that small little thing, I think that we think that we need to make Hail Mary throws in order to win the game every single time. And really, it's just the small incremental steps again and again and again, the compound that actually give you and bring you success. And so I'd say, find those 3 things. Do it every single day. There is time. You always have time. There is more that can be done because somebody's in a worse situation than you are and is doing more. And that's not to beat you up. That's to say that is all possible. And so if you see somebody that's achieved it, that means that you can achieve it too. And then I think the last thing I would say is change your circle, right? If you're making excuses and there's nobody that's on your rear end that's saying like you're just making excuses that are like you need to get up, you need to do more, you need to be more, they're saying that you're not there yet, change your circle. And I that whole product of the 5 people that are closest to you is who you are. The second I started walking in different rooms, and I used to be cool to be in the room where you're the big dog. I always want to be in the room where I'm the smallest person there because I start to elevate and my life changes. And so like change your circle, change your mindset, start with 3 things, do it for a month. Like do it for a month. Like you cannot go to bed. You cannot rest. Go to like, and you'll be surprised what changes. I think that's the most practical advice that I can give. And very real.
I like it. The specifics of the 3 things.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have to be large things.
Don't.
You know, just pick what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
3. Well, I would say 1 small thing, 1 medium thing, and then 1 task that becomes a little bit harder than the second task.
Mm-hmm.
Do those 3 things. I love that, man.
That's every day. Yeah.
Gonna get selfish again real quick. So I said we were gonna end, but
let's go.
Need some help. The squat.
Yeah.
Right? Is it, would you identify it as a safe exercise? So I was born with scoliosis.
Okay.
Right? And it's slight scoliosis. So like I'm dragging it a little bit, but I do have a curvature in my spine.
Okay.
I used to squat heavy, and again, heavy is not 700 pounds, but heavy for
relative,
me,
yeah.
You know, was 405.
Yeah.
Right? Which was heavy. Now I'm not touching
top
anything
1%
over.
Of men in the world, yeah.
Oh, I'm top 1%?
Yeah.
The world champion is telling me that?
Yeah, still top
1%. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go, baby. So, but nowadays, And today was a leg day for me, by the way, if you couldn't tell. That's why my quads are booming out here.
Okay.
So I've noticed, though, like, I guess I'm trying to identify what am I doing wrong? And is it, would you say that somebody who has to warm up properly, is it the hip that becomes too tight? Because I always have pain when I'm like after my squat. Now, again,
pain
I'm,
in like your adductor.
It's more lower back, and I'm just tight all the time, man. So Is it really just me opening up my hips that's necessary and the consistency of stretching? Like here I am talking on this podcast all the time about like, you know, the importance of being consistent and discipline and the structure. But it's very hard for me to like stretch and warm up properly. Is that making the difference for me?
I mean, without seeing like your squat, like because there's so many things I can go into it.
So keep the camera on him though. So
it's
so if I'm here.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do a like.
Can we put this on?
So I'm here and I'm up. Right. So I try.
Yeah. So I think part of it's also I think you suffer from like this notion that your knees need to be like more upright, your shins and your knees can be upright. So if you watch my squat, you'll see a lot of forward knee travel.
Really?
And what that actually provides is a lot of room for your hips to actually get down into the movement, right? Just like, just off that air squat, I can tell you likely don't squat low enough, right?
That what? I don't squat low
squat,
enough?
Squat low enough, right? And that's also one, because you're probably, your ankles are probably a little bit tight. Yeah. Your knees, you're trying to force yourself backwards because you think that your knees aren't supposed to go over your toes. And so having that forward knee, that knee travel actually provides more room for your hips, which will probably put a little bit less stress on your back, because what you're probably doing when you have load on to make it feel like you're going low enough, you're probably bending and collapsing at
absolutely.
Your, and so that's putting more stress on there. And so again, without seeing it with weight and all this other stuff, like just
no,
like
no, that's
fireside
a great,
chat type of thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's a great diagnosis.
That would be probably one thing that I would kind of look at. And then again, you know, with
safe
with
exercise,
your, with your, yeah, if, I mean, drinking too much water is dangerous, you know?
I like that.
Yeah. you know, so I guess safe is relative, right? If you do it correctly, it's not going to hurt you. It'll make you stronger. Like you could say somebody that killed themselves squatting. You could talk about the 80-year-old person that started squatting when they're 70 and now their bone density is 10x stronger than people their age. And now they're living healthier lives. Like there's extremes on both ends. Mm-hmm. So like safe is relative, I guess. But when done properly, it can definitely, you know, be a beneficial factor for just like your health, overall growth and things.
You know, it's funny. So I'm a certified sports performance specialist. I have been for years. I work with a lot of athletes.
Okay.
And in any book that I've ever read through National Academy of Sports Medicine, I'm certified. It's always don't let the knees pass the toes in terms of athletic performance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, like now you got me even thinking more that that's not true from a powerlifting perspective?
I mean, not from what, you know, what I've been taught and what I kind of know to be true based on just my experiences and trying things out for myself.
Well, I think it works. I mean,
and if you look, and it's not just me, if you look at almost every top squatter in the world, you're going to see forward knee travel. You need it. Like, you need it. Also, to be fair, a lot of people squat, and there's two different types of squat. There's a high bar squat and there's a low bar squat. So you probably put the bar up high on your trap. Here.
Well, my traps are huge, if you haven't noticed.
Well, I'll have the bar a little closer to like my rear delt. It'll be kind of falling right here, like right off the shelf.
So
falls
back on your trap.
Yeah. So you'll see like the bar is probably like, if you look at it like here on my back when you're up here. So it changes the dynamic of where how you need to squat to keep the bar on your midfoot, if you will. And so with like a lower bar squat, you do want a little bit for knee travel. You'll have a little bit more of like a diagonal kind of look to your back there to keep the bar on your midfoot, but also allows you to push more weight because it's just a little bit more optimal on that front. You're a little bit more stable.
Can I get a session in with you?
For sure. Let's do it. Let's do it.
You heard it here first.
I bring the videographer. We do a YouTube. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Podcaster turned squatter for a day. No, man, this has been great. I think you provide a lot of value here, and I'm actually very grateful that you came on a podcast and that I met you. We have a lot of mutual connections. Brandon Gadoris was actually on the podcast probably 2 years ago when we
he was telling me about it when I was talking about it. Yeah,
that's funny, man. Good dude. So no, man, thank you for coming on and sharing what you did, and I'm very excited to watch this journey unfold for you, man.
Absolutely.
You know, I had a moment upstairs, like, you know, when he told me his age, I'm thinking like, it's not like I'm so much older.
Yeah.
But when I heard you graduate, when did you graduate, Pace?
2016.
Yeah. for me, I just was like, oh, wow, he's 15 years old, but he's only 5 years. What are we, 5 years apart? Not even.
Yeah, about five, yeah.
No, man, so thank you very much. Anything else you want to share before we sign off? Let everybody know where to find you and how they can stay connected to Delaney, the big quadricep Wallace.
Yeah, guys. Like I said, Delaney Wallace, World's Strongest Accountant. You can find me on Instagram. Just my name without the first E. So DLaneyWallace. It gives you a good kind of mix of everything that I kind of do. And if I can leave you with anything, every single day I recommit to my commitments and I implore you all to do the same. Peace out.
Beautiful. Guys, share this episode. This podcast is growing tremendously, and it's because of you. So whether you listen to one or 162, we just want to say thank you. You can always shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. And as always, until next time, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
Yo, man, we gotta go squat right now. Right. Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.